Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. We're back, and it looks as though all my technical difficulties are behind us, which is always nice. I am a very untechnical person. So this is Reni, and you're back at Reni's Heart to Heart. I'm glad you joined us. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day. And last week on Bullies to Buddies Day, we talked about all of the movies that Izzy has put on that in his book that he believes are helpful. And I would agree. I think that everything that he writes in the workbook about specific movies, although some I never saw, is appropriate. The good thing about seeing things like bullying or understanding poor behavior in a movie is it puts it in a real life situation. So you can actually analyze if maybe something like that is going on in your life, you know, where it's coming from. And a lot of times, bullying or poor behavior or inability to get along with others is something that you even may be guilty of yourself. So I think it's an opportunity to not just understand it a little bit better, but maybe work on our own behavior. As I've said on the show on several times, after I do a show about judgment, hoarding is another one. I've realized with all my study of hoarding, I'm a bit of a hoarder myself. I didn't think I was. My house is usually fairly neat, but I am. I realized when I went from a 4,000-square-foot house to an 1,800-square-foot house that I got a lot of junk, a lot of stuff I didn't need. So doing this show for the last almost 2 years now has taught me a lot about myself, and I hope we can do that for all of you. I hope that we can get you to look inside or maybe look in the mirror and make the adjustments that will make your personal world a better place. Because remember, it's not always about other people. Sometimes it's about yourself. So let's bring Shelley in. I'm ecstatic to see her phone number on my dashboard this morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Reni. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I can.
Hey.
They've actually changed my whole dashboard, so they must have had to do a lot of work. And,
wow.
Because everything is different this morning, but it's good. Maybe even a little bit more workable, so...
User-friendly.
And I think it's kind of a work in progress. You know, I think, like everything else, when you start using it on a, you know, with so many different people, I imagine things had to change. Because I think Blog Talk Radio has really taken off. In our circle alone, I know, besides us, I know two other people that are using Blog Talk Radio to get their feelings and their stories and their information out there. So it's gotten pretty big. So today is Bullies to Buddies Day, and you'll remember we left off last week in the movie section where Izzy has helped us see some of the lessons that are in these movies. But before we go to those, I was just sharing with everybody, and I think you heard most of it, the fact that a lot of times we have a tendency to think everything that's wrong or everything that is unpleasant for us in our lives is due to the energy of others. And I think Bullies to Buddies Day is a good day to remind all of us that sometimes it's us.
Mm-hmm.
With all due respect and honesty, sometimes it's us. So maybe when you listen to a show, that talks about bullies, or when we talk about these movies, and you can put yourself kind of like the outside looking in and see the behavior of somebody else, maybe you'll see you. Maybe you'll, by seeing you, you can make some adjustments, and the only person that you can make adjustments in, yourself, that makes your world a better place. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think most of the time what happens to us is in our control. And when I was younger, I didn't believe that. And the first time I heard it, it insulted me. I didn't accept it because I had had some pretty awful things happen to me at the hands of others throughout my life. But as I got older and the more that I read and the more I educated myself on psychology and how the mind works and how we affect how other people treat us, I could actually go back and see changes that had happened in me, and that when I thought and acted this way, these things happened to me. And as I matured, as I became more in control and more self-aware, those things started happening less and less and less, and then stopped happening altogether. So I could actually see how my attitudes towards other people, my attitudes towards life in general, as it changed, things for me started changing. Things just, and here I am, the same person, I'm in the same field of work or around the same people, yet my situations began to improve or to change. And it's just like I had mentioned once before on the show, that course I had taken, it was given by the police department and by a man who was an ex-convict. He used to mug people, and he was giving a lecture. Now he's trying to help people. He was giving a lecture on how he would pick who he was going to mug. And he said that he would never mug anybody that looked self-confident or that walked straight up with their shoulders back and looked like they had to be going somewhere, because he knew he'd have a fight. He would go after the person that was slumped forward, shoulders down, maybe looking at the ground, that looked timid, and he never had any resistance. And he was able to target people by what they looked like, without even knowing them, without ever having a conversation with them. And that's how he would choose his victims, by the people that looked like they didn't have any fight in them. So I'm not saying that it's somebody's fault, but I'm saying it's something that we can learn to improve, whether it's if we're walking in a dark place, to walk like you know where you're going and pick your shoulders up a little bit, to look like you have fight in you, things like that. And you can do things like that psychologically in dealing with people in normal day-to-day things as well. You can carry yourself in a certain way to minimize negative interactions with people. And you're probably one of the best examples of that. You have dealt with some of the most difficult people, but because you always maintain yourself in a particular level of sincerity, honesty, and caring, it's very disarming to somebody, even somebody who's purposely trying to be mean to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, funny because I had this conversation. Thank you, as usual, Shelley, for thinking that of me. But I had this conversation yesterday with my granddaughter, and she is having some issues with the school she goes to, and she's trying to make some changes, and she's running into brick walls. She's 17, so before she can really make the changes, there has to be a parent or guardian with her to sign the paperwork. But in the interim, she's trying to make all of the whole scenario come together, the steps that she has to do to have what she wants to have happen. So she said, "Graham, they don't want to talk to me because I'm a kid." And I said, "Aren't you talking to them on the phone?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, then how do they know you're a kid?" I said, "Your voice isn't like a little girl's anymore. They thinking you're a kid because you're talking like a kid." And she said, "What do you mean?" And I said, "Well, you have to be polite. You have to ask for help with some sincerity in your voice, and you don't have to sound like you're so young that they can walk all over you, but you have to sound like you know what you're talking about." And she said, "I do." And I said, "Do you get short-tempered because they do talk to you like you're a kid?" And she said, "I don't think so." And I said, "I think you do. I know you. And she said, I don't mean to be. And I said, I know, it's in your makeup. I said, but before you make a phone call like that, or before you address somebody that you know is going to be difficult for you to win over, before you tell them what you want, you need to win them over.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, how do I do that? And I said, by being nice, polite, sincere, and listening when they talk to you, and talking, you know, in a calm voice to them. I said, because you'll get their attention that way, because so many of their calls are not like that. You know, I said, it's all about getting somebody to hear you, just like a child. If you scream at a child, they shut you out. Believe me, they shut you out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say, come here, I want to talk to you. Is something going on? Do we need to talk about something? And get eye contact with them if you're in person. If you're not in person, a phone is sometimes easier because you can do everything with your voice. So, but what I found interesting about looking at these movies and thinking about it, as I said, I've learned so many things that are bad about me that I didn't even look at before since we started doing this show. Has that happened to you?
Say that again?
I've learned so many things. Well, I use the word bad. I don't mean bad, but I mean things that I don't like about other people I've seen are true about me since we started doing the show. I mean, different ways, but still true, you know?
Yes. Well, that happened to me when I started reading the books. Not so much because I've gone through so many changes in the last couple of years. But, yes, when I started reading the books, I started recognizing some of my own behavior in those books. And I was like, oh, wow. You know, so I never really had a victim complex, but there were certain incidences in my life that I allowed myself to perceive myself as a victim. And as I went through this growth period, I went back and I revisited some of the real heavy-duty challenges of my life and realized that I wasn't a victim, that I really was part of the issue. I mean, I could have made different decisions that put me in that position and things like that. I let people talk me into something that I shouldn't have done. So even though it was at somebody else's encouragement and deeds, the bottom line is I made the decision to either put myself in a place that I wasn't comfortable in, and then sure enough, something bad happened, or, you know, things like that. And we get gut feelings about things. We have to listen to them. So, and then I also did recognize some of my own bad behavior. I mean, because I used to have a very, very quick, hot temper. I would calm down quickly, but, you know, I had already, you know, filleted 10 people. You know, and I noticed that in myself, that my anger that I used to spew out at people a lot of times was secondhand anger, where I was really angry at this situation and I was taking out on this person or this group because I couldn't react to the person I was really angry with. And I started coming to terms with that, you know. So, yeah, so I came to a lot of realizations when I started reading these books and stuff like that, and I really read them with an open mind. And, you know, started connecting the dots for myself and for other people in a more truthful way. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, a better evaluated way, probably. That's how I feel about some of the things we've talked about on the show, because we start talking about them and I think to myself, geez, I've done that before, or I'm guilty of that, or I haven't heard somebody's talk to me about that and I haven't listened. To the point where I was going to be any good to them. And
by the way, I do want to make a quick comment because you said earlier that you saw that you had a little bit of hoarding in you also. And
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
The word hoarding is now a clinical diagnosis. Hoarding just means to be like a pack rat or something like that. And I think a lot
right.
of people are pack rats. They keep memorabilia. They keep
yep.
or they might
collect.
Maybe they. And they have boxes and boxes of collectibles in a back room, and they're not displaying them anywhere, but they keep collecting this thing. But that's not a hoarder in the clinical definition of a hoarder. I have stuff like that, too. where I have some memorabilia. I used to keep a lot of old business records, and then finally a year ago I said, you know, I'm never going to use them again. I just finally threw them out. A hoarder is somebody that does what you and I are doing, does it to an extreme, and then can't discard it. The property is actually like a piece of them. They actually have their identity through their property now, which is extremely unhealthy. All right. When you put too much importance on physical property, that's being a hoarder. When you can't even throw out garbage or get rid of
things
that you won't ever use again. You know. So that's what being a clinical hoarder is. And when you're, I mean, I know people that have a lot of collectibles and maybe their houses are a little cluttered, but they're still not hoarders. Providing, you know, they keep their house clean and they're not eating spoiled food and they don't have garbage all over the place. But hoarders actually will get to the point where their place of living is so dysfunctional that it becomes hazardous. That's when you have a problem. That's when you have a clinical diagnosis of a hoarder, when you cannot emotionally separate from your belongings, even when it's creating an environment from you that's hazardous to your health, mental or physical or otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I agree with that. And, of course, we both have talked about this privately. We've both watched a lot of the hoarding shows, and that's for sure the truth. If somebody is, and to take anything to the extreme usually means there's other issues going on. I agree with that. I guess when I said I'm somewhat of a hoarder, I wasn't thinking so much about my I think I hang on to things that I didn't have a lot of as a child, for what that's worth. Mm-hmm. And I never had a lot of clothes like my other friends. My mother didn't think it was necessary. I don't know that it wasn't. It was because we really couldn't afford it all, though I think money was a part of the issue. But I had girlfriends who had walk-in closets when I was a teenager that, you know, like I have now. And bras and underwear. If I had three bras, I felt like I was like in hog heaven when I was a teenager. Now I probably have 30. So things like that that are ramifications of going without when I was a kid. And when I moved here from the big house, I was like, what in God's name do I still have this for? You know, and I realized that I'd had many opportunities to throw it away, and I hadn't. So I did a bit of cleansing when we moved in here, and it was, I'm not going to say I was like some of the shows that I've watched, but there was a tinge of remorse, Shel, sometimes when I said, yes, we can throw that away.
Well, you know, what's so funny is that I've shared with you that over the last few years, I've downsized my house and I've thrown out, you know, where I've just ripped apart files or rooms and stuff and started going through stuff that I had brought from New York and just, you know, went through a couple of different apartments and just never had an opportunity to, like, go through the boxes. It wasn't that I was hoarding them. I never had the time because of my work schedule to figure out what I wanted and what I didn't want. So I finally get down here. And I'm opening up boxes, and I'm like, what in the hell have I been holding on to this for? So I'm, like, throwing stuff out. And don't you know, the week after I go through all this, I need this thing that I threw out that I had for, like, 10 years and never touched. And then it's like, oh, I have one of those. Oh, no, I threw that out. Or, you know, it was always like the week after I finally get rid of something, I need it. You know, but that's like a classic. The minute you throw it out, you're going to need it. And it has happened to me a couple of times, but I think the benefit of clearing your space compensates for holding on to just too much clutter. Yeah, you shouldn't get rid of everything that might be useful, but certainly get rid of the things that you just have no sentimentality or have no need for anymore. A lot of the stuff I got rid of, I literally just didn't need anymore, and it wasn't something I could give to somebody else. It was just taking up space in my life.
Well, and amen. I mean, you know, I think that's really true of all of us. But it did give me some insight because, as I said, moving from, I mean, I struggled to fill the big house. By the way, I mean, you know, that was the biggest house I've ever lived in, and I really struggled to fill it. You know, And of course, then all of a sudden, and I gave so many things away when I knew I was going to leave there, but it was still like, I remember the night when we finally got everything in here. You couldn't even turn around. I mean, you know, it was, and the kids just looked at me and shook their head, the grandchildren. Graham, you're never going to be able to put all this stuff in here. Now, this weekend, everybody was here, and we've been here 2 months now, and of course, they've all been in and out and in and out, but now I have things set up pretty well, pretty organized, and they came in and said, Grandma, you should do this for a living. I would have never believed you could get all that stuff in here and have your house look nice, and I said, thanks. I guess that's a compliment. Yeah, but, and it's, you know, I wondered myself there a few times in the beginning if I was ever going to get it all in a place. And I still have stuff that's sitting here in my office that has to be placed someplace. But it did make me, it was good for me. It wasn't a bad thing. It was good for me. And so mm-hmm. are the judgmentalities. I watched Paula Deen this morning on the Today Show. Her and her two sons are coming back from all of the, all the falderal from last year when she said the N-word and she did this and she did that. All charges were dropped against her because actually the manager that called her out on this and, you know, accused her of discrimination and hate crimes and all that kind of stuff that they did to her for using the N-word, she was found not eligible to make that call because she was white. So it didn't affect her in any way, shape, or form. If Paula Deen offended a black person by using the N-word, then it shouldn't have anything to do with this white manager, which I thought was kind of amusing, that whole turnaround. But she's talking, and I'm thinking to myself, I would have stuck up for myself. But she admitted today on TV that she shouldn't have been on TV. She shouldn't have been talking to anybody because she was a wreck. She says, I look at now the interviews, and she said, I should have been home on my couch and staying away from everybody until I got better. I might have needed the assistance of a mental health doctor. And she said, I didn't know it. And she said, but I grew up in the South, and those kind of words were used all the time. I never said those words to offend anybody. It just fell out of my mouth like a lot of us say. There's a lot of people who are more offended if you say God damn it than if you say the F word because of how they are brought up. I never say the F word. I say, but of course I believe in God and I don't want to offend anybody, but I say that word all the time because I've heard it all my life.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of thought to myself, you know, this is one of those scenarios when she should have been able to step back, analyze what was going on, see herself, and she did need to make some changes, so maybe that's why it happened. But she's risen again. She's not my favorite person, I want to say, only because she's a little bit, kind of overplays the Southern Belle kind of thing. But I appreciate her business sense. I appreciate her ability to keep on rising above everything and doing what she needs to do. So for that, I don't dislike her, but she's a little too strong in the Southern Belle arena for me. I'd like it if she was just a little bit more down to earth. But maybe that is who she is. So here's me being judgmental. Here you have truth and fact, right?
Yeah, they come across sincere even when they are being sincere because they're sort of melodramatic and over actors uh-huh. as a part uh-huh. of their persona. And so someone who is down to earth is going to see that as being phony when mm-hmm. sometimes the exaggerated way that they speak and act is actually kind of who they are now. It is their persona.
Yep.
It's not a persona they're putting out there like acting. It kind of is. I mean, I know people that are melodramatic, and they're melodramatic by nature. They're not melodramatic just because they're trying to make a point. They could talk about going out front and getting the newspaper, and they say it in a way that's melodramatic because it's kind of how they talk about everything. So, and I mm-hmm. think that's some of these typical Southern Belles come from. They have a very dramatic way of presenting what they do, and I think it's almost cultural.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right, and I believe that as well, and I get that as well, but I guess I'm not fond of that persona. I guess I believe in women are not fragile.
Exactly.
In my opinion, we are not the more muscular sex, but we are definitely the stronger sex. And anybody who wants to argue with me with that can do that face on anytime you're ready. So that is what it is for me. So
right.
To be, to like have the vapors and all that crap is like for me, oh, please get a grip. So I want to get into the movie. So, but we only have four left. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other things, and I also want to let everybody know in case we run out of time at the end, because we've talked about this for a bit of time. I got a call last night from Daniel Sohn, who is friends with the lady that we talked about yesterday, Lauren, and he is inviting her to talk on the show. So he's giving her, isn't that great?
Yes.
And he's giving her our phone number today, and I will make a time for her to talk. I so look forward to it because I got a lot of feedback, even though, we couldn't call in and we didn't have our normal show yesterday. A lot of people are still in that gray zone, believe it or not, even people that are, our ages, they're confused about sex even now. And certainly they're confused about what they say to their kids or how they explain things to kids. So it is an issue. And I think one that needs to be discussed openly and honestly. And I know that it's hard to do that. I know that it isn't easy to talk about sex to a child or to anybody for that matter, because it's a personal thing. So, but I do think it's time that we talk about it, and I think it's time that we make sure that the young people understand what's okay and what isn't okay, and give them back some of their power, their personal
power.
And Danny is on the show tomorrow with a couple other folks that are going to talk to us about identity theft, which is certainly on the rise, especially somebody said to me, I want an iPhone, one of the iPhone 6s. And I said, why? And I said, you're not working Wall Street. You don't have to talk to 15 people at a time. You don't have to have everything interlinked. Do you know that somebody can, I think, and if I'm wrong, it won't be the first time, but it seems to me the higher the technology of what you're using, the more opportunity for people to get in and see what you're doing. For me, it doesn't matter. There's not that much money in the bank. There's not this, there's not that. So I don't worry as much about it. But I have had my identity stolen before, and it just caused a lot of turmoil for me. It didn't cost me a whole bunch of money. But
well,
he's going to talk about that tomorrow.
About these new phones that are on, and we'll discuss this tomorrow because I want to hear what Daniel has to say. But, I have the new Samsung Galaxy S5, and I think it's a wonderful phone, by the way. I'm not doing a commercial for it, but I'm very pleased with the phone. But, they have a lot of games that you can do on the phone, which is great. Like if you're waiting on a line or you're laying in bed, you can't fall asleep. And, they have these, mind brain teasers. And I like the logic games, Tetris and stuff like that. And they've got a bunch of them, and they're free. There's a bunch of games you can pay for, and some of them are even expensive. But they have a ton of free games on there. But I went to download a couple and then canceled it, because when you look at the permissions you have to give it, you are actually giving it permission to go into your phone and look at your personal data. And I'm reading what the game has to access. And I was like, no. Why would the game have to access all that? So I canceled out of it. So I ended up finding three or four games that didn't go so deep into the personal data on my phone. Still had to access the web through my phone, still had to access something else, but didn't have to go into my personal data. But a couple of these free games actually say, you know, there's like 8 different permissions you have to give it, and some of it is to go into the personal data stored. And I'm like, why in the hell would it need that to launch a game? So I said, no, I wouldn't let it, I wouldn't allow it to load. I canceled the load. But I'm wondering how many people just want the freaking game and don't even pay attention to the permissions they're giving, you know. And it was something that got my attention. I want to bring that up in the show tomorrow and hear if Daniel has anything specific to say about that arena, because I think that's where a lot of people put themselves up and what they put on Facebook and social media.
Well, many times working in with the judicial system and lawyers and everything over the past few years, it was information like that was given to me that, please don't write anything about this, please don't write anything about that on your social network. And I'm like, why? The only people that read my, you know, are friends, and I don't, there's not strangers on my Facebook page and everything. And he said, yes, there is. Yes, there is, because you make a comment on Facebook and somebody else shares it, it goes on their Facebook page. And I don't think like that. So, of course, I've known that for a long time now, but that was in the beginning of after Mike got hurt. And there was a Facebook page for Mike. So we were asked to be very careful about what we talked about. And there's a reason for that. So I know about that, too, and I know that young people do that all the time, open up something on their phone and haven't read any of the disclaimers. So that's a big, valid point. Please remember to talk to Danny about that tomorrow, especially if I forget about it.
Because
don't
it's always
it
on my mind.
That's important. Yeah, and it is important. So and it can make a big mess for you. So here's one of the movies that he put in, and I remember watching this, and I honestly didn't get any of this stuff out of it, but I thought it was, I love the way he analyzes these things. Remember the Titans. He says, I love this film, and I think it should be required viewing by everyone. It's hard for me to imagine anyone retaining racial biases after watching it. Remember the Titans is about high school football teams, but you don't have to like football in order to enjoy it. I love the movie, too. Denzel Washington plays a football coach who refuses to let anyone treat him or the black kids he coaches as victims. Embodies my teachings completely. That's from Izzy. There is a wonderful scene in the locker room. One kid insults another kid's mother, and that kid gets mad. But then another kid insults another kid's mother, and before long, they're all hysterically laughing, making mother jokes. So I guess the lesson there, Izzy doesn't say that, but the lesson there is to take away the insult, to take away the anger from a scene like that. If you want, I mean, you know, remember when mother jokes came, oh, your mother's so fat, when she sits around the house, she really sits around the house. Or right. my wife is so ugly, I tie a bone around her neck to make the dog play with her. You know, things like that. You remember when all those came out.
Yep.
They're meant to be funny. Not to be taken seriously. So
also,
he's right.
Remember the Titans in the beginning, they wanted nothing to do with each other. The white players and the black players wanted absolutely nothing to do with each other. And because in order for them to keep playing football, they had to integrate. They had to play with each other. They actually, I forgot what he did in one of the scenes, but it was a classic Izzy. He made them talk to each other. He made them share one personal thing to each other so that they would start understanding where they were different, but where they were alike. And a couple of them you could see had aha moments when they started talking to each other, because he would, you know, he would put one black kid and one white kid together. And he actually forced them to communicate. He said, whether you like it or not, that's your teammate, and that's who's going to watch your back. You better figure out a way to get some, you know, team spirit going here and some camaraderie, otherwise you're not going to win a game. And they ended up doing exactly that, kind of almost against their will because they weren't interested in it, but they did end up bonding, and they had, like, really, really tight relationships. It was a wonderful movie for that because it showed the transformation they went through coming out of their own bigotry and biases, and a lot of the parents weren't okay with it, but the guys on the football team ended up rising above their own biases, and it really was a remarkable movie. And you know, when he said, you know, putting the stereotypes aside, but they came to it on their own because of this coach who I thought was brilliant. This is a true story. So, and I like watching movies like that that are based on true stories, because you know that if it happened in this one little area of our planet, it can happen over and over and over again when you utilize that same formula of respect and authority and things like that. And that coach was brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I love Denzel Washington anyway. Almost everything he does, I enjoy watching. And I agree with that. I think that's one of the most wonderful things you can do is bond. Just bond however you can, because a bond is harder. It's harder to hurt somebody or with any kind of intent when you have a bond with them, even if you're angry with them. So mm-hmm. I loved it too. The next one, I remember the name of this, but I don't know that I watched it. The Buttercream Gang.
Yeah, I never heard of that one.
Yeah, it was made in 1996. I watched this movie because it was recommended to me on two separate occasions by seminar attendees. The movie is quite corny, but the message is great nonetheless. It shows the power of unconditional love and beautifully illustrates the transformative power of treating people like friends. It takes place in a small town called Elk Ridge that is kind of like an all-white Christian heaven on earth where there are no minorities in the movie. Practically all the characters are blonde-haired and blue-eyed, including the boys, and almost everyone is incredibly calm and peaceful. And it contains religious Christian preaching, so it may not be appropriate for group viewing in settings that are strictly secular or require cultural diversity in their programming. Personally, because I'm Jewish, I did not appreciate the twice repeated statement that turning the other cheek, New Testament principle, has come to replace an eye for an eye, the Old Testament principle. The eye for an eye concept is widely misunderstood and maligned. When the Bible says an eye for an eye, it is not meant as a prescription for personal revenge. On the contrary, just a few sentences before, the Bible forbids taking revenge. An eye for an eye is strictly instruction for courts of law, meaning that punishments must fit the crime. But this objection should not stop you from seeing the movie. We're going to have to find that, because he doesn't really explain the movie, but he piqued my interest on what that must be like. It must have been the Buttercream Gang must have been
written
by Hitler.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find it today. I'll go for it.
yeah, let's, because that sounds like something that we could maybe get something out of. But I agree with an eye for an eye means that the punishment must suit the crime, and that makes a lot of sense to me, and that's the way I look at it too. I don't know if I've ever verbalized that or put it into those words even to myself, but that's what makes the most sense to me. An eye for an eye doesn't mean revenge, so I like that. Harrison Bergeron, 1995, is a unique, refreshing movie based on a story by the great author Kurt Vonnegut. The movie shows what the world may turn into if we continue on a path of making everyone equal. In this future world, technology is used for the goal of making everyone average. Above average people wear a head device that zaps them whenever they have an above average thought. Students are encouraged to strive for C grades Anyone getting higher is reprimanded by the teacher. Harrison Bergeron, the hero, is in the unfortunate position of being a genius who is impervious to the head zapper. That means that the head zapper doesn't stop him from having his own thoughts. In this brave new world, he is a hopeless misfit. My favorite scene is when he is dating a sweet girl who has the misfortune of being below average in intelligence. Detecting a clever thought in his date's conversation, he pays her a compliment. "I don't think that you're stupid," she replies with a compliment of her own, "and I don't think you're that smart." While this movie may seem far-fetched, I unfortunately see too much truth in it. When I began working as a school psychologist in New York City, schools had programs for gifted students. Though the cost of running these classes was only minimally higher than running a regular classroom, they have been phased out with no replacement, yet tons of money are showered on special education students, and the lower their potential, the more money spent on them. Students mm-hmm. who have the terrible misfortune of being a little more than vegetables receive intensive, expensive therapies that have little or no chance of actually providing any benefit for them. That's such a sad fact. And while the nation's and the world's future depends on the brightest of our students, we give them no extra public support. If we end up with mediocre society, maybe it's because we've been asking for it. Wow.
You know, that's wild. Have you heard of the movie?
Kind of gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, have you heard of the movie Divergent? It's been in the theater now.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, I know of that.
Okay. Did you see the movie or you just know of it?
No, I just know of it. I've just seen it advertised.
Okay. Anyway, when Nina and I were coming back from Germany, it was one of the movies we were able to watch on the airplane, so I got a chance to watch it. And it's very similar in storyline to Harrison Bergeron, a little bit different, but basically what it's about is that society is being classified into five different mental capabilities. Some people are humanitarian, some people are like architectural type mindsets where they can figure problems out, some people are brave and are the protectors. So what they do is when you're at a certain age, you have to go through this classification process and you're put into that area and that's all you ever do for the rest of your life is whatever they classify you at. Somebody who is divergent, who is multi-capable, like somebody who has a mind that's both humanitarian in nature but brilliant and can figure out complex geometrical problems, is actually seen as a danger because it means they're going to be thinking outside of the box. They want cookie-cutter drones. They want
mm-hmm.
people who are gifted
mm-hmm.
at this, only do that. They don't want people thinking outside of the box and being creative. And this is how they have an orderly society, and everything works because nobody breaks out of it. So it's kind of a similar concept. And the movie is about the girl who it's discovered by one teacher that she's divergent, that she's actually gifted across all five aspects. And when they discovered this about her brother was executed. So the whole movie is about getting this girl out there
keeping
and protecting
safe.
Her. Mm-hmm. And so it's this whole mm-hmm. thing. And so she realizes early on that she can't let anybody know she's divergent and all that. But it's a key thing. It's a key element throughout the movie that she realizes it, and she has to not let anybody know that she's this way. So she actually has to dumb down her responses sometimes to not let people know this, and it's a fascinating movie, and it had some really terrific messages in it about people trying to be too much like everybody else. The diversity or the divergency in us is what makes us potentially very powerful, but to people who are high up and just want drones working for them, this is this is an element of something that they don't want. So when you talk about dumbing down schools, like what Izzy just said, I think there's mm-hmm. more deliberation, more deliberate action creating that than people might be willing to accept. They want us to be the higher-ups, the people that are in power, that are running this planet, want the general populace to be intelligent enough to be a good workforce for them but not intelligent enough to question these people that are in power. And I think that's where a lot mm-hmm. of this comes from. And that may sound a little controversial. There's a lot of people that think the same way I do.
Well, I don't know. I'd have to ponder this for a little while, even though I don't disagree with being able to be. I mean, whatever happened to the big slogan, be all that you can be? But I guess the more we get run by a populace that separates themselves from us, such as our government is attempting to do at this point in time, the more fear is generated from them to make sure that they can handle us. And by handle us, I mean handle us. So I don't disagree with you. You and I have different thoughts on a lot of that kind of stuff because you're a little bit more, left-wing or right-wing, like my husband. You think more like Spike does. I'm more Pollyanna about a few things like that and choose to, maybe for my own safety, believe that some of those things couldn't possibly be. So, but I do think that we are becoming a world that's more controlling on a daily basis. And that scares me a little bit. Of course, I'm not going to be here that much longer, I don't think, anyway. In the next 50 years, there'll be a whole new generation. And maybe they'll be handling it, Shell. You know, maybe there'll be a whole new generation of people that just deals with it. Maybe it won't have as much significance then as it does now. I don't know. If you really let your mind wander, I don't know. It gets pretty convoluted for me because I'm not smart enough to keep it all organized. But there's a lot of stuff going on that
because
I
sort of go there, and I do. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I certainly do see a lot of things out there that just don't seem right to me. So I question them. But I'm sort of mm-hmm. like you in that I also have. I get such a kick out of the fact that you call it a Pollyanna, outlook mm-hmm. on life. Because I do sort of have a Pollyanna outlook. I think that human beings at their basic nature are incredibly talented and gifted and have great capacity for kindness and compassion and intelligence and, you know, all these good things. I think it's a tragedy that so many in the masses don't rise up to their potential. But I think as human beings, we have incredible potential. And I see a lot of children today who are very gifted, and I really do see them as a brighter future for us. So I do sort of have that Pollyanna attitude, that Pollyanna outlook, that I see things getting better, even though every day you read in the news a lot of things that seem like it's not. These are happening simultaneously, and I always believe that good will always win out. So I do mm-hmm. sort of mm-hmm. go there also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I used to work with Mr. Nick, we called him. He was in his late 70s when I worked with him so many years ago. And every morning I'd walk in the back door of the kitchen of the Rosebud in Ithaca, New York, and he'd have all these giant pots already on the stove and be whistling or singing a song or something while he's working. He'd look at me and he'd say, "Morning, better days are coming," every morning. Every morning for like 8 years. And I remember thinking to myself, God, I wish that was true. And then I can remember reflecting on him years later, thinking to myself, that's why he was always so happy. Because he knew what sucked that day was going to be changed by the next day.
Right.
And he chose to think it was always going to be better. I don't know that it was always better, but it would certainly change. And mm-hmm. And that's such an amazing outlook. Now, here is a movie that I watched for the first time when I was pretty young, and I got to be honest, I barely understood any of it the first time I watched it, and then I watched it years later and thought to myself, what a weird movie. But Clockwork Orange, 1971. This film,
I never saw that movie, and I know so much talk about it.
Yeah. This film, directed by Stanley Kubrick, is one of the most powerful and visually stunning movies ever made. though misunderstood by many people as a glorification of violence, it is really a thought-provoking criticism of society's attempts to get rid of antisocial behavior through the use of simple behavioral reprogramming techniques, as though humans were computers with no basic nature. To me, it parallels today's simplistic attempt to get rid of bullying by declaring it to be a learned behavior that can be unlearned through instilling guilt and fear of punishment.
Right.
I have seen it 3 times over the decades, and each time I appreciated it more. It is stimulating viewing, but it is not for the squeamish. So, and it was, I'll be honest, well, let's see, if it was made in 71, I wasn't a kid by any stretch of the imagination, but I was not, I was too young for that movie. I wasn't worldly enough for the movie the first time I watched it, for sure. And all I got was the gore and the line that I've never forgotten when, God, I can't think of his name right now, the guy that starred in it. He's still a star. He still is, but he always gets, like, bit weird parts. I can't think of his name. But he says to a girl, "What say to a bit of the In-N-Out?" And I was like, what did he say? And I never forgot that, right? Oh, God, I almost had his name. But and the rest of it, it was pretty gory. It was pretty gory. And I should watch it again now and see how it affects me.
Yeah.
But I wanted to read this because this is just some sentiment from Izzy. "After Columbine, I began creating this website. The Columbine shooting woke me up to my mission. That infamous massacre made it impossible to ignore the fact that practically all rampage school shootings are committed by victims of teasing and bullying. But I was astonished by how the mental health and educational worlds reacted. Instead of teaching kids how not to be victims, they were going to get rid of bullies. I knew this could only make matters worse. Since I had developed what I believe to be the best way of handling the problem, it was clear to me that the most important thing I could do with my life was to make my knowledge available to all." I love that. And, of course, Shelley and I probably shouldn't speak for Shelley, but I do so many times. We were both incredibly enamored by Izzy. Mm-hmm. We like the fact that he's not Pollyanna at all, and yet he thinks with regard to all. He doesn't think in terms of a bad guy versus a good guy. His whole book, his whole educational manual is about remembering that we all have feelings. And he teaches that the bully, the bad guy, is probably a good guy that's being bullied. And he also teaches us the only way to stop that cycle of I'll be mean to you, then you'll be mean to Nina, then Nina will be mean to Dawn, and then Dawn will be mean to Danny, and all the way down the line, the only way we can stop it is not by putting all of the bullies in a pen together, because then there won't be anybody on the outside.
Right.
So
right.
He's trying to get us to understand that anything we decide, whatever works for us in our personal lives, has to work for all, not for the white hat versus the black hat or vice versa, or good versus evil. It has to work for all. And that's what he's trying to achieve. And, of course, that is what would happen if we all learned how to deal. You may change the life or at least the day in a life of somebody who's miserable for reasons that you may never know, just by not getting upset by the way they looked at you or what they said to you and turning it around. What a challenge. What a challenge, right?
Mm-hmm.
You may make the difference between that miserable old fart that comes and sits in your restaurant every day just by, here's your coffee this morning, honey. Love your shirt. You may put him on a whole different role. The As Good As It Gets. Remember that movie with Jack Nicklaus and Helen Hunt and Greg. Yes. He's a pain in the ass, and he's a recluse because he's got so many idiosyncrasies, and he's just self-centered, and all he thinks about is his own comfort zone. And he ends up, first of all, helping the gay guy who he ridicules and is so, makes fun of and all that kind of stuff, takes over watching his puppy. The puppy wins him over, first thing. Then he actually feels himself growing an affection for the only waitress that will put up with all of his idiosyncrasies, finds her, almost stalks her. She's mad at him, but he ends up helping her little boy who's so sick. So his day turns around. You never watched As Good As It Gets? I think that's As Good As It Gets.
Yeah, I know what movie you're talking about. I think I saw bits and pieces. I never watched it from beginning to end, but I knew which movie you were talking about.
But it is the perfect perfect way to explain how things can work. And Helen Hunt doesn't kiss his ass by any stretch of the imagination, but she does understand that he's got all these idiosyncrasies. It's her job to be a good waitress, so she deals with it. And she deals with it with a pretty decent attitude when nobody else in the restaurant will. So at the end, he ends up being her savior. And it's just, it's make-believe and all that good stuff. Everybody says to me that doesn't happen in real life. And I said, I think you're wrong. I think it does happen
in real life. Remember that story? I wish I could remember the individual's name. This was something I had heard years ago when all these shootings were happening. And just like random shootings, gang shootings, school shootings, and things like that. And this guy was being interviewed, and he is now a successful businessman. But he was talking about how when he had just graduated high school, he was having a terrible time, couldn't get a good job and all that. And he had actually gotten a gun, and he had such a disdain for people because evidently he didn't get along with his teachers, he didn't really have any friends. So he had a really bad attitude towards people in general, and he was going to go rob a deli. I guess this was in New York. And he was going to go rob a deli, and he had all the intentions of shooting somebody to get what he wanted. And he was even talking about this, that the thought of killing somebody was not an aversion, whatever. He could actually see himself shooting somebody to death and didn't even care. And as he walked into the deli, he said this woman looked up at him and smiled, a really friendly smile, and nodded at him like, have a good day, and he couldn't go through with it. And he said it actually shook him up because up until then, nobody had ever connected eyes. This is one of the points he made. He said nobody ever looked him in the eyes. He said this woman looked up, looked him right in the eyes, and gave him a big smile, and he couldn't go through it. He went home, and something snapped in him, and he ended up that one incident just completely turned him around. And he didn't get rid of the gun, but he said he never took it out again. And here it is years later, and whatever happened to him. Now, what if that woman had not taken a couple of seconds to look up and be friendly, and he had gone through with that? He would have ruined somebody else's life if he had shot somebody, and his whole life would have moved forward in a totally different direction. So our little random acts of kindness can have profound... You may never know, but it's such an energetic, happy way for us to be for ourselves. Don't you feel better when you smile at someone? The energy it takes to smile at someone, you're bringing that genuine happiness up in yourself. So it's always nice to just to throw these random acts of kindness out, even for yourself.
Mhm. And I agree with that so much, so wholeheartedly. And I think that it's what everything is about. It's really what everything is about. So, but we're done. I want to thank everybody for being here with us today. And everybody go out and have a great, great day. We'll be back tomorrow, don't forget, with Danny and a couple of his new partners that are going to talk about identity theft and how what we can do possibly to curb that. So everybody have a great day. Thanks, Shel. I'm glad you were able to get on the show today.
Yeah, me too. Well, thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you in the morning.
Bye-bye, everybody. God bless.